You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, everyone, tell me if this is you or you know someone who reflects this situation. Can we still do this? Is it too late? For Becky, who we're going to be speaking with today, she's starting out with her husband with a net worth of zero at the age of 50 and found a way to reach financial independence by the age of 63. Now, this is not based on strong financial decisions over their entire life or even over the first several decades. In fact, she says the first 25 years of their marriage, they made poor financial choices, leaving them to this place, this inflection point at the age of 50, where they're starting from scratch. From there, a combination of Dave Ramsey, Choose FI, and Retirement Manifesto enabled her to effectively accomplish within 13 years something that we've said is replicable. So the reason that this story holds so much appeal to me is encouragement. This is simple math, and it's not based on when you found it. It's not based on the fact that it's too late. It's based on the fact that if you take small actions each and every day forward, you can transform the trajectory of your life and that of your families. So I'm very excited about this episode. And help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I'm doing quite well. And yeah, this should be incredible. It's never too late. How wonderful is that? It's never too late. Everyone should take that in. And we're going to learn all about Becky's story, of course. But there's an even cooler little sub-story here. I was listening to the Bigger Pockets Money episode a couple months ago from Camp Fi Rocky Mountain, and I'm sitting there listening to this podcast, and I hear this woman, Becky, and I was just blown away by her story. So I actually, that very minute, reached out to Stephen Boyer, who's the organizer of Camp Fi, sent him a Facebook message. I'm like, Stephen, who is Becky? We have to get her on the show. And he responds back. He's like, that's actually Stephen Heptig from your team. That's his mom. How crazy is that, right? So Stephen is the one who is doing our FI 101 curriculum. He's also doing a military course through the Choose FI International Foundation. And this is his mom, Becky. It's incredible what a small world. And with that, Becky, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be here.
You know, as I was starting to share with our audience where you found yourself at the age of 50, starting from scratch, was that an accurate summation? And what would you like to add to that just to give our audience a sense for, you know, what your financial game plan was for the first half of your marriage?
Yeah, that was the problem, is we didn't have a game plan. Stephen, my husband, and I met in college. We graduated and had pretty good jobs with decent salaries. And interestingly, at that point in time, we were actually making more money than our parents were at that same point in time. So we had both grown up in households where we had all of our needs met, but we really didn't have a lot of extras. In fact, my parents were children of the Depression, so they didn't have much of anything in their younger years. And that whole era sort of sets your mindset about possessions and money. When I was young, their life was a little bit better, but not much. My mom was a school teacher. My dad was a blue collar worker, and their incomes were pretty low, but we had everything that we needed. Unfortunately, what came out of that was there was no instruction on money. They took their paychecks and paid the bills and hoped there was enough left for the groceries and, you know, maybe something else that they might need. So when Stephen and I graduated college, we were literally making more money than they were at that point in time. We had neither one had any training about money. So we had great salaries. So we felt like, gosh, we've got a chance now to have a few things that we haven't been able to before. So we started consuming. We felt like as long as we can make the payments, or if it was something that was really important to us, then we would buy it. This was in the late 70s. The mindset then was you buy a house as soon as you can. So we had folks encouraging us to not only buy a house, but buy the biggest house we could afford because our salaries were only going to get better. Well, this was in the late 70s, early 80s. This was oil boom time. We were in Houston. It's a big oil town. So we thought, sure, our salaries are only going to go up. Things will just get better from here. So we bought a house. We bought a new car. And about 3 years later, we were introduced to sailing, fell in love with it. And we bought a sailboat and a yacht club membership. I mean, life was good. We were doing great. We, you know, had our own place. We had great cars. We had this hobby that we just absolutely loved. And we used the boat a lot. Sometimes you would see people, you would see boats on the pier that you never saw anyone use them. But we loved it and we spent every weekend there. So it was a big part of our life. What we didn't do was any planning for the future. We thought about it and knew that we probably needed to do something at some point in time, but we thought, we're just going to think about that later. We've got plenty of time. We were not living on a budget. We weren't saving anything, and we did not have an emergency fund. The firm that Stephen was working with needed to move someone to Boston. We volunteered for that position because we thought the cost of living difference between Boston and Houston is quite large, and they will have to increase our salary. And when we come back from this short 2-year assignment, then they would not walk that salary back, and we would be in an even better position than we were at that point in time. We knew it was risky, but we thought it was worth taking the risk. Unfortunately, it did not do anything for our finances. The housing market in Houston had really dropped. We couldn't sell our house to move to Boston, so we rented it for a $300 a month loss. The salary bump we got for the increased cost of living in New England wasn't really quite enough to catch up. And so we came back actually in worse shape than when we left. Then about 6 months later, that firm started laying people off and eventually closed their doors. So that combined with the fact that I had quit my job and was a stay-at-home mom when we started having children had really put a dent in our income. Stephen had several jobs with small, he's a commercial architect. He had several jobs with small architectural firms over a few years, and it just never really went anywhere. All along this period of time, we felt like we were only making enough money to continue life the way we had it. We still weren't thinking about the future and about saving anything. We hadn't saved anything for college or even an emergency fund, which really was a problem later on.
So I want to hop in here. I want to ask you a question because you've gone from making both incredible incomes to now one of you earning income to now that industry, you know, for a time just disappearing or getting punched in the face and going into retreat and your husband being laid off and then now having to look for work on his own to supplement. I'm curious, along with all of these setbacks, because you hadn't been looking at your budget before, you'd never had to, you'd always been able to keep up, but now all of the income has dried up and you still have the sailboat, the yacht club membership. You know, and I'm just curious, did you respond quickly enough to the change in income?
We did some. We sold the sailboat, let the yacht club membership go. So we reeled in our spending to a point, but we had not reeled it in to the point where we were saving anything. My husband worked for himself for 9 years. And his income at that point in time was not great. It was typical, you know, work for yourself kind of thing. Some years were good, some years were not so good. And we would adjust our spending accordingly. After a few years of him working for himself, there were two clients that decided they didn't need to pay him equal to about a year's worth of salary. And that was the event that really sent us over the cliff. because we had no emergency fund. So we didn't have any income. He still had engineers that had contracted to him that he owed money to. And he was determined that he was going to pay all of those bills. So we found ourselves with no income, no emergency fund, and buying groceries with credit cards. And at that point in time, fear really set in for me. The amount of debt we were in at that point in time was $55,000. It doesn't sound like a big number now, but that was several years ago.
And can I also clarify in terms of type of debt, is this credit card debt that we're talking about?
Some of it was credit card. Some of it was business debt. And probably there was a car loan in there.
Okay.
The amount of debt we had wasn't that big compared to what you hear today, but I didn't see any way of getting out of it. Everything that we needed, we were buying on a credit card. So I felt like we were digging a bigger hole every day. At that point in time, our kids were junior high and maybe going into high school. And so we knew that college was going to be facing us in just a few years, and we'd also saved nothing for that. So what I was living with was this idea that this is just going to keep getting bigger. This snowball is going to keep getting larger, and I'm not going to be able to get out from under it.
So, Becky, I'm really curious about the psychology of really this entire journey. You come out of college, you're making this incredible salary between the two of you, and you're spending freely. But you are thinking about finances a little bit, which is kind of interesting because you mentioned this grand scheme to move to Boston and to make more money. I'm thinking this isn't just someone or a couple who are just completely unaware. You're thinking about finances on some weird micro level, but yet you weren't saving any money. And then you have these lean years and you said, fear really set in for me. I'd love to hear about your internal thought process as this journey is going along, because I think to me, that's what's so intriguing. Are you thinking about money at all when you're 22, when you're 30? How does this evolve?
We thought about money, but the problem was we were only thinking in the moment. We were never projecting out to what are we going to need in our 40s and 50s and 60s. We just kept kicking the can down the road of we'll think about that another day. We took this job in Boston thinking it might improve our situation, but that was still thinking about improving the current situation, not the future.
Okay, so that increase in income would have in all likelihood been spent.
Probably. Probably, yes.
It's interesting only thinking in the moment. I think that is what typifies probably 250 million Americans. We don't think long term. I don't want to jump ahead, obviously, but did that begin to shift during these dark periods when you're spending on credit cards? Were you thinking about college and retirement and things in the longer term at that point? When did this start to shift?
I say that I don't ever want to go back and walk through that pain that we were experiencing at that point in time. But unfortunately, it took extreme pain to change our mindset. It really wasn't until we were in those dark days that we started thinking we have to do something differently. We can't continue on the path that we're on now. Not only was it painful emotionally, as you can imagine, it caused a lot of difficulty in our marriage. If things had not changed, I think there was a real possibility that this issue could have taken our marriage down. And I know that money issues are one of the big causes of divorce in America. But it was very, very unpleasant. And it took that pain for us to realize that we had to do things differently. At that point in time, we didn't know what that was, but we knew something had to change.
It was interesting. As you were saying it, one of my thoughts was, you know, the reflexive fear that you felt for the first time was actually, you know, probably this awakening moment. And it strikes me that if you had gotten the raise, if you had just been able to get by, if you hadn't hit the wall, you would not be where you are right now. You would not reach this level of finance. You would still be paycheck to paycheck in your 60s without the level of pain that brought this awareness. It's just kind of interesting to contemplate that and realize that, like, in a vacuum where everything's just barely working, where you're sustaining, or you're just letting that kind of lifestyle inflation carry you up, by the time that you do realize, you know, by the time you, that fear point, the sooner you can have that fear, that awakening, that can get you to make some serious changes, which is, you know, it's cool to watch that play out in your own life.
Yes, I agree with you. If we had not experienced that, I honestly don't know when we would have changed our mind about planning for the future and when we would have stopped living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah, it's amazing how these negative events, you can really use them as the impetus to move forward. And your story is the perfect example. But I want to talk about this moment. You're at this precipice, really. You're talking about a precipice financially. You're talking about it with your relationship. Things can really go different ways at this point. They could have went very differently with your relationship if you just kept butting heads and arguing. But how did you come together as a team? I think that there's this point where you're at this stressful point in your life, but the two of you came together as a team and moved forward. Do you have any recollection of conversations or how that happened? Because honestly, this is a true inflection point, and I'd just love to hear about it.
One of the things that helped get us out from under the extreme pressure was that my husband, Stephen, closed his business and went to a W-2 job. It was difficult for him to do that because he loved what he was doing. We loved having him at home, even with the years of income that were not so wonderful. It's like the old MasterCard commercial. Having dad home was priceless. He was able to go to every school event, every whatever that the kids were doing. And he was in a little more in control of his time because he was working there at home. And when he had to close that, it was difficult for him because he felt like he had failed. He felt like he had failed at business and that he had been a failure to as the provider for his family. So it took a while for him to reach the point where he could go out and look for another job. And obviously, as soon as he got a W-2 job, then that eased some of the pressure on our finances and on our relationship. We knew we needed to change something, but we still didn't know what that was going to be. Honestly, what changed us was someone introduced us to Dave Ramsey. Someone loaned us cassette tapes, believe it or not, that I listened to in my car. And I brought the information to Stephen and I said, I think we need to check this out. So we checked out the DVDs from a library and went through the class ourselves. And that was the pivot point where we saw that there is a way to take control of this. And we had actually gone to some classes before that for financial information, some financial literacy, but they talked more about the concepts of money rather than giving you step-by-step instructions on what to do. When we listened through Dave Ramsey and understood his baby steps, that made sense to us. It stuck with us. We could do step number one, and when you get done with that, then you go to step number two. That was the thing that really turned us around and brought us out of the dark times that we were in.
Becky, can you place us in your time of life at this point and where you were financially? So I guess debt-wise, I think I'm hearing it's $55,000. Is that the number we're talking about specifically? And roughly how old were you? Just give us a sense of where you were in time and place and financially at this point.
Yes. The first W-2 job that Stephen took was in 2006. So we were in our late 40s at that point. He worked at that job for 2 years. And in those 2 years, then we were able to pay off all of our consumer debt with the exception of a car that we had. So we paid off the credit cards. We paid off the business debt and we're down to the mortgage and one car.
So this is around 2006, and this is when things start getting better. Before we move on, I wanted to talk about maybe these darker years where the income wasn't great, where you were putting everything on a credit card. I mean, you said you had 3 children, and at that point, they were in middle school and high school, and we're talking about college in the future. I'm curious about the impact on them. And do you think they were aware of these issues? Did you and your husband, Stephen, actively try to hide it from them? Clearly, family dynamics are so important, and I think a lot of people don't really talk about this with others. And it would help the audience dramatically if you can talk us through that. Obviously, you and your husband, Stephen, were dealing with this, but you had three other nearly adults at that point in the house. And what was that like for them?
We did not hide it from them. Of course, we tried to soften the conflict between the two of us a bit, but the kids were aware of our financial situation. There was a point when I actually sat them down and said, if you can't eat it, we're not buying it. So don't ask. Later on, I actually wondered if maybe I had been a little too hard on them, a little too harsh with my approach, but we didn't hide things from them. They understood that things were not great, and I don't think they were affected that much by it. In fact, I've actually asked them recently what they remember from that time and if it affected them, and their answer was that they didn't really remember, you know, anything awful. They weren't aware of that. If anybody has more than one child, you know that your children are all different with different personalities. I've often wondered if those financial hardships made an impact on them as adults. One of my three kids has turned out to be extremely frugal, and I don't know if that's personality or if that was affected at all by what we went through. But I think it's valuable for your children to see mom and dad struggle with an issue, find the solution for it, work together as a team, and then come out the other side into a better life and on a better path. I know that they learned from our mistakes. They're all grown and married. So they are late 20s and early 30s now. And they are in much better shape than we are. And my hope is that they learned from our mistakes. And that's also my hope, my desire to put my story out here in a format like this, is we experienced that pain, and I would like to save others from doing the same thing. If anyone can learn from the mistakes that we made, then that's wonderful. And I don't have any problem telling my story for that reason.
I'm thinking maybe Stephen works with us here at Choose FI, so we can actually have him on the show this Friday to do a little bit of, you know, what his take on this was and kind of see if we can bring some stuff out. I don't know. We'll try. Well, I can't promise that, but we'll give it a shot. But even if we can't do that, Brad, I know that you told him this interview with his mom was coming up, and I know he was sending you some messages. Why don't you go ahead and read what he sent over to you?
Yes, Stephen has actually been blowing up my phone today. It's actually really fascinating because he's an active duty military officer and he's deployed, and he's literally sending these to me from across the globe. And he said, they kept us in lots of sports as kids, even when we were broke. And that probably was a major aspect to us not realizing we were broke. And he said, I'm not sure how they did that, whether it was by sacrifice, by cutting things, or if it was continually putting things on the credit card. Becky, that's a valid question Stephen has for you. I'd love to hear it.
Oh, yeah. What was it, Becky?
It would have been a combination of all of those, probably. We did cut back so that the kids could have what would look like a normal life. We put some things on credit cards. We had some help from grandma. I know that there was a semester when our daughter did some ballet classes, and grandma paid for that. We actually received help from some of our friends. We'll get into this a little later, but one of the things that's very important to Stephen and I now is our generosity and how we practice our generosity. And we've actually been on both sides of that coin. We have been givers of help and we've been receivers of help. There were times in those years where things were so bad that some of our neighbors and our friends at church knew the situation that we were in. And we would find an envelope of money on our chair at church, or a neighbor would come by with a Kroger gift card, which allowed us to buy groceries or gas. So it was a combination of a lot of things and a lot of support from our family and our friends. that is an area where we're very intentional about trying to pay it forward.
I want to take a look at this next chapter here. Honestly, we've spent a lot of time, I mean, probably the majority of the show actually talking about what got us here and this inflection point now. And I want to keep our audience in mind that one of the reasons we're excited to tell this story is this 13-year transformation for your financial future that you and your husband and your family have been on. We're kind of right here. We're starting to see the threads. You had this light bulb moment, largely due to this awakening due to this fear reaction. It caused you to look outwards and you started, you know, you took Dave Ramsey's course or you listened to Dave Ramsey's cassette tapes at the time. And you get a plan. Like, what did you do?
Envelopes. That's true. Well, where we started was learning how to do a budget. We used Dave Ramsey's envelope system. I mean, literally, I had white envelopes with cash in them. I know that there are people who are budget people and others are anti-budget. I'm a budget person. I had never lived on one. I'd never used one before. I didn't even know how it worked. But we sat down and put a budget together. That was the mechanism that gave us boundaries. Literally, those cash envelopes would keep us from overspending in categories. The budgeting and the information that we learned with Dave Ramsey included a total 180 shift in our mindset, because I had been a very spendy person. My personality is a spender, not a saver. And Jonathan, I identify with you and that I'm a reluctant frugalist now.
We do what we have to.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And I appreciate Brad's take on things as the valuist. I think that's now what I have become, is a valuist. But we reined in our spending, and a combination of that and a good salary for Stephen at this point in time. When he took that first W-2 job, he worked there for 2 years. Then he switched to a different firm. It was actually an architectural firm that he had admired for many years and was able to get a position there. And he worked there for 10 years. So from 2008 to 2018, and he had an amazing salary. And even with everything that we had learned and all the changes we had made, the way that he was paid in this particular job was still an advantage to us. He had a large salary, but we didn't get it all in his monthly paycheck. The majority of it came in bonuses. His actual salary level was pretty moderate. And so what it forced us to do was live on his salary, and the bonuses were what we used to basically make the huge change that we had. And you have to remember that not only were we saving for the future, but at this point in our lives, we're saving for college and we're saving for weddings. So we had a lot of demands on the cash that we had, but the salary that he had and the change in our mindset allowed us to make the difference. And that's something I want to say to folks who do find themselves in this position in their 40s and 50s. You may not retire early like a lot of the guests that you have on your podcast, but when you're in your 40s and 50s, that is when usually you have your best earning years. So in some cases, folks who find themselves in this position that need to make a change will have a decent salary to work with. I mean, we ended up with a huge shovel to accelerate our savings rate, because we did do it in a pretty short time, but that's part of how we got there.
So Becky, what about the other side of the equation, the expense side? Did things change dramatically after finding Dave Ramsey and after your husband Stephen got this new job? Or did they stay fairly constant on the expense side, and then the increased income was what made up most of these changes in your path towards FI?
We changed our spending habits also. We became more frugal and basically learned that we could still be happy with less consumption. We still were purchasing things that meant something to us, but we got rid of anything that was frivolous. We had always bought brand new cars. You know, we were of that mindset of, I don't want to buy somebody else's problems. And so we realized that the world won't end if we buy a used car. And so we did change a lot of our consumption habits.
We were talking about how you're just now starting to think about personal finance and you're kind of starting to think about it in rudimentary form. But as you lean into this for longer and longer, you become, you know, more sophisticated at it. You're introduced to new tools to make that process and more tactics to make that process easier and speed up. The reason I say that is that you projected your retirement to be at the age of 66 or 67. You reached financial independence at the age of 63. What sped that up?
Actually, it was being introduced to you guys. We had greatly improved our situation. We knew how to save and we knew how to be frugal. We didn't know how to invest. In fact, we tried picking mutual funds on our own at first, and that was an epic fail. So we went with an Edward Jones advisor, and he helped us a lot at the beginning because we didn't know anything. So he was useful in our path to financial independence. He was the one who actually projected that we would retire at a normal retirement age of 66 or 67. So things were rocking along pretty well at that point. In 2017, our son, Stephen, that works with you guys, introduced us to your podcast. I had never listened to a podcast before at that point. I didn't know how to download one. So he helped us get it all set up and we started listening. Basically, what happened was y'all's information took what we had learned and what had made huge changes for us in the past, and it put it into overdrive. We had the basics, but we didn't have the graduate level. And we felt like that's what we got from you guys. Within a few months, we fired our financial advisor and started following Jim Collins' Simple Path to Wealth ideas and moved all of our money. You know, we had reached a point where we thought, okay, the kids are out of college. They're all married. Well, actually two out of the three at that point were married. But the kids are all out of college. We've got the weddings funded, and we're at a point where we can loosen the purse strings just a little bit. We can stop being so tight with the budget and, you know, enjoy the fruits of our labor for the next few years until retirement. And when we started listening to Choose FI, we realized that, wait a minute, if we keep on the way that we are now, and we make these other tweaks that will even improve what we're doing, then we can exit the workforce a little earlier. So that's what made the difference, and it helped us shave 3 years off the retirement. So Stephen retired at 63 instead of 66 because of the foundational information that we got from you guys.
So Becky, that's amazing. And obviously you set me up right there for my next question. What were these tweaks, these post-Choose FI tweaks? What did you do to shave off those couple years right there at the end?
Part of it was moving our investments to Vanguard and to stop paying those fees. And part of it was to continue to live the frugal life that we had gotten used to instead of, you know, letting go and being a little more freer with our spending. And then hearing Fritz from Retirement Manifesto on the podcast really made a big difference for us. We got on his website and pulled out his spreadsheet. We had tried some other spreadsheets before that, and they were helpful, but weren't really conclusive. And Fritz's spreadsheet really helped us a lot. It was easy to use. It had all of the buckets that we needed. We plugged our numbers in, and that's really what made us realize that if we stuck with the current game plan, that we could drag that retirement date forward.
So Becky, I wanted to ask real quick about the Simple Path to Wealth and your strategy. So your son, Stephen, again, he sent me this litany of text messages today, and he said, they are one of the few people I know that is really doing the J.L. Collins Simple Path to Wealth. They have no real estate, no business income, no side income, none of these things. He said, you guys have the vast majority of your net worth in broad-based, low-cost index funds.
We did before my husband retired. At this point, we are using the bucket strategy, and we have 80% 10% BTSAX, 10% VBTLX, and 10% cash.
So tell us what your bucket strategy looks like for yourself now. Refresh for our audience in terms of your mapping out where your finances are going to come from in the next, two, three years. And the market could do anything. The market could be softening. The market could go up from here. How do you and your husband mentally prepare and financially prepare for the next several years using the bucket strategy?
Well, we're living off the cash. In fact, we actually just started making withdrawals from Vanguard in August, I believe. I have to tell you that we have planned this inside out, upside down, every way that you can think of. And we know that the plan is solid. But I have to tell you that the first time you pull money out of your investments, it's like stabbing yourself in the heart. It's not easy.
It was so easy to spend it when it was just cash coming in, cash going out. But now it's yours. Right. It's been sitting for 10 years. You're like, ooh, no.
Right, exactly. So we spend out of our cash bucket. We have, I think it's about 3 years worth of cash in that. And I still live on a budget. I mean, I don't have my white envelopes anymore, but I'm not sure I'm ever going to be able to let go of the budget because it's the guardrails for me. It helps me to know where I am right now. We have our own spreadsheet where we keep all of our budget information. And I have a section of the spreadsheet for what we call long-term accruals. So that is car insurance and house insurance, what I'm going to spend this year for Christmas, taxes, all the things that you do once a year. And so we keep track of that, probably on that spreadsheet every 2 or 3 days, just to keep track of where we are so that I don't lose control again.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I just think that someone's listening to this. There's multiple people that are getting value from this story. There's individuals that are listening to this saying, that's me. I'm starting too late. Is there still hope? Yes. Yes, there is.
Yes. Yes.
Second individual listening to this is someone that's within a few years of needing to implement the bucket strategy and is saying, ooh, someone that's drawing down, what are you doing? And then in a person like me, that's kind of, learning this as they go, you're a relatable person. What are you doing? You just said, I withdrew money from Vanguard for the first time and it was like stabbing myself in the heart. let's just spend just a few minutes talking about practically what do you and your husband, Stephen, how do you guys map out? So you have 3 years of cash. That is 2019, 2020, 2021. So when you're making a withdrawal for Vanguard, is that for 2022? And just walk us through mechanically how you prepare for the next several years.
We are drawing out of Vanguard. I believe the way it looks is that we'll be drawing out once a month. We still are keeping track of every penny that we're spending. And we plan on drawing out of the cash on a monthly basis. And then once a year, we will be rebalancing between the bond and the stock bucket and refilling the cash bucket.
So when you're bringing from your investments to a cash bucket, right? So you have this blend in your investment vehicles of stocks to bonds. You just mentioned this rebalancing act. And then you have 3 years of cash. You use 1 year of cash. So now one of those buckets is empty. And you're drawing out, are you drawing out of bonds? Are you drawing out a blend of both? Like, how are you guys bringing that money from Vanguard over?
Probably it's going to be coming out of bonds, but at the point, we still need to pick a point in the year where we're going to rebalance. But we'll look at how the percentages are at that point in time and see if we need to move stocks to bonds or bonds to stocks or what we're going to pick up to put back in the cash bucket.
I would love to connect you with Fritz at some point so you guys can chat about the bucket strategy that you're using. And then just check in with you every so often, maybe, just to see how your bucket strategy is getting more sophisticated. What have you learned to make yourself more comfortable to slowly ease that stab in the heart sensation? Was it just getting repetition? And I think finding individuals that are actually in the process of drawdown that are dealing with market volatility that has been baked into their calculations, that's incredibly valuable for the community just as they're simultaneously dealing that with you. Would you be open to?
Absolutely. Awesome. Absolutely. I mean, we're experiencing some market volatility. There was some, a couple of months ago, and literally the day we're recording this, the last couple of days, things have not been very pretty. But you just have to as you do when you are accumulating, you have to stay the course. You can't panic, whether you're in the accumulation phase or the drawdown phase.
All right, Becky. So at this point, you and your husband are at FI. To me, one of the most poignant aspects of what you mentioned earlier is generosity. I kind of got goosebumps earlier, honestly, when you talked about your community helping you. And now in turn, it being really important for you to give back to your community. And I'd love to hear about what you think about generosity generally, what this looks like in your FI life, maybe what your FI life just looks like in general. Just tie it all together for us, because this is really the final aspect of your story. What does your life look like now?
Well, interestingly, we are learning how to be retired. Luckily, I've heard a few other people say that that it is a learning process. We picked up our life. We had lived in Texas. We picked up our life and brought it to Colorado. So we have a new house, a new neighborhood, a new climate, a new altitude, new friends. Everything has changed. But circling back to the generosity, that is something that's very important to us. And I would encourage everyone to find ways to be generous, even when you're in the wealth accumulation stage, even if things are not going quite so great and your income isn't large, you can still find ways to be generous. Our lives are enriched when we are generous with our time and our talents and our resources. One thing I'm passionate about is to try to help people not walk through the same pain that we did. So after we found Dave Ramsey, we were facilitators for several years. We taught his class. We even had this was interesting. My daughter is our youngest. And when she was in high school and her peer group was high school and college age kids, we saw student debt, how it was going to affect these kids in the future and how it can just be a weight around their ankle for decades, possibly. So we had a class with about 10 of her peers. So we're talking high school and college kids. We went through the first four lessons, I believe, of Dave Ramsey, which takes you through the debt reduction and how to get on a budget and how to have an emergency fund. And so the basics of what he teaches, we brought these kids together at a friend of ours' house and had sort of a boot camp weekend and went through these classes and just taught them this information so that they could hopefully create a better life for themselves. The bookends of our age group was the youngest was a sophomore in high school. The oldest was a sophomore in college. The bookends of financial position was we had one student that had been told by his parents ahead of time that he was going to be responsible for part of his college education, that they were not paying all of it. He and his brother had a lawn mowing business that they had run for several years, and he already had $20,000 in the bank saved. The other end of that spectrum was one of the college kids that was, I believe, a sophomore, and he already had $40,000 in debt. The thing that warms my heart and that energizes me is seeing how they took the information that we taught them and applied it in their lives. Even the kid who had $20,000 in the bank already assumed that he would not get out of college without student loan debt. And he has since graduated, has a great job, and he graduated with zero debt. So I felt like that what we had done at least helped a few people.
Yeah, and I can say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Your son, Stephen, is really creating a great resource for the world. I mean, he's creating this FI 101 for Choose FI. He's creating a course for military financial literacy. I mean, it's very obvious that you've taught your kids these amazing lessons. So thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. It's still our passion to teach these principles. And I'm excited about the class that y'all are coming up with because there is information out there, but I don't feel like any of it is really complete. And I'm excited about what you guys are doing because I want to continue to help, to mentor, to teach other folks this information, and y'all's resource is going to be great. It's going to make it easy for us.
Becky, someone's listening to this and they just want to connect with you. They want to find out more about your story. They want just more information. There's some bit of this that they want to figure out how to incorporate into their own life. What is the best way for someone to connect with you?
Well, I'm on Facebook under Becky Heptig, and I've actually just started a blog. So I'm a baby blogger, and my blog is startedat50.com.
Oh my goodness. I hope everybody goes there today and just says hi. That's amazing.
Well, the only thing I have up there so far is my story. My goal is to put out some basic financial information. I'm not trained in this. The only training I have was my own experiences, but I can talk to people about the basics of, yes, you need to, you know, look at where you are, figure out where am I starting, and get out of debt if you need to. And so it's just some of that basic information. And what's helped us to get where we are now was basing our financial decisions on biblical principles. The Bible actually has quite a bit to say about money. And so that's something that I'm going to explore on the website also.
Let me ask you this. We're going to title this episode, Is It Too Late? And someone's going to be listening to this and they have that question and they just ask you just point blank, is it too late for me? Have I missed it? What do you say?
It is not too late. It's never too late to improve your situation. What you need to do is start now. Don't put it off any longer, but you can always improve your situation. And what I suggest is to evaluate where you are and forgive yourself for your past mistakes. And you may even have to go to some of your friends and your family members and ask forgiveness for them. Your bad financial choices may have spilled out onto other people, but forgive yourself, formulate a plan, and move forward. You may not retire early, but anything you do now, any additional savings that you can accumulate now will make your future less stressful and more comfortable. And as I said before, a lot of people are in their peak earning years in their 40s and 50s. So you may have some great tools to work with, and it is definitely not too late to improve your situation.
Oh, all right. Well, you know, on most shows, I think that would be the end of the episode, but come on, Becky on the show, we've got to tackle the hot seat. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready. Bring it on.
In a world drowning in debt and rampant consumption, trapped by the chains of lifestyle inflation, these questions highlight the secrets of those who have broken free. Welcome to the Choose FI Hot Seat.
All right, Becky, question number one. What is your favorite blog, podcast, or book of all time?
Well, I'm going to take some freedom here and name all of those. I couldn't narrow it down to just one. Favorite blog is Retirement Manifesto. And my husband actually reads Fritz. And I can't sit still long enough to read very much. But my husband loves Fritz at Retirement Manifesto. It helped us a lot. And my favorite podcast, you may have heard of it before. It's these two guys, Brad and Jonathan.
They're pretty cool.
My favorite podcast is you guys at Choose FI, because we learned so much and were able to make some significant changes in our situation because of the information that you guys have put together. And I also want to give a shout out to Paula Pant at Afford Anything. I really enjoyed listening to hers also. And then,
oh, you're doing the trifecta. Okay.
I am. All three. And then I have to plug Jim Collins' book, Simple Path to Wealth.
Nice.
It's made a huge difference. In fact, I keep a bag of books in my car, and in that bag is copies of Simple Path and Dave Ramsey's Total Money Makeover. And if I find anybody that I think is open to the message, then I give them a book.
That's awesome. All right, Becky, question number two, an inflection point in your life that was especially memorable or meaningful.
Well, I'm, again, going to take a little freedom with this. My inflection point or my memorable moment is actually not anything financial. The most important thing to me is relationships, and specifically relationships with my family. We have a list of core values for our family. And when our kids were little, we even typed them up, framed them, and put them on the wall. The core values can be boiled down to integrity, honor, and service. It is so cool now to see my adult children. They're all married now, so they all have their own families. It is awesome to be able to look at them and see them living out those values of integrity, honor, and service. And so that's my inflection point.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's hard to go wrong with integrity, honor, and service. That's amazing. I love it. All right, Becky, question number three. What is your favorite life hack?
My favorite life hack, there's two. Of course, I can't narrow it down to just one.
Troublemaker on the show today.
That's right. I swim upstream. My favorite life hacks are credit card rewards, which I was not aware of until I started listening to you guys. And personally, it's having a bullet journal. My middle son introduced me to a bullet journal, and it has really helped me just keep myself organized.
Right. Follow-up question on that. I've tried to do it twice, and it never sticks. I realize there's a leaning-in process to all these things, but you have to be taught how it works. You don't just, you know. So, like, for you, what resources did you use to learn a system, you know, enough that it would actually stick?
I can't remember off the top of my head the name of it, but my son that introduced me to the concept sent me some links for some YouTube videos that he watched. So I've been doing it since the beginning of 2018. So again, it's one of those things that you just have to start, because I have worked into how it works for me, how I'm going to use it, that it's beneficial to me. And the way I use it may not be the same as the next person.
All right. Question number four, your biggest financial mistake you've made.
Well, there's so many to choose from.
You have to choose one on this one. You get one.
It was my biggest financial mistake was not starting sooner and not having an emergency fund. We had no safety net.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of paired, so I'm just going to tie these together. And I think, honestly, this episode is that advice. But if there's something that stands out, question number five, the advice you would give your younger self.
I would say start now, because you can start small. The amount of money that you can start with is not going to really be a big burden on your budget. And we just never thought of it that way. You can start with $100 and that will make a difference, and then increase it as you go. You're not going to want to stay with that, but just start early.
So Becky, normally we have this bonus question that we threw out, a purchase that you've made over the past 12 months that's added the most value to your life. But I actually want to pivot this slightly, going back to something that you said earlier. You know, we decided when we decided to pursue financial independence that we weren't going to let our purse strings loose. You know, we're going to hold on to our frugal backbone, and we weren't going. And to me, you know, I'm like, yes, but on the other end, I'm also looking for, like, is this the future you want? And so I'm curious, have you ever loosened the purse strings? Are you able to enjoy the toys to some varying degree? Like, what does your life look like now in the context of having reached financial independence? What are you guys doing with that freedom?
Yes. We have made a few purchases. Like I said before, we try to be valueists. So we are frugal in certain areas so that we can enjoy the hobbies that we have in other areas. So our large purchase is that we have two Porsches. We own two race cars.
Are these 2019 Porsches?
They are not. We drive race cars, but we don't race. It's a very subtle difference. If you were standing on the edge of the track and watching, you really wouldn't know the difference. But we drive on the track with other cars, and we are basically just keeping track of our own time. So we're not racing against the other people on the track. We drive under very strict rules of when, where, and how we can pass another car. And so it's all about safety. But my husband drives a 1987 911 Carrera. So he has a classic car. And then I drive a 2006 Cayman S.
You guys are amazing. Like, do you ever just feel like, are you allowed to do that? I mean, are you still allowed to have these sorts of adventures?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I try to never say I'm too old.
I love it.
Like I said, we sailed. We love sailing. We can't do it where we live now, but we've always had some big adventure type of hobby. And I have to say, I have enjoyed, even though it wasn't always friendly to our budget, my husband and I have always had hobbies that we do together. We both enjoy the same things. And that has been a real marriage enhancer, actually.
So do you feel deprived? Has this been a life of deprivation?
No. I wish I could have avoided the pain, but I don't feel deprived.
Becky, I have no words, but thank you so much for joining us on the show today and sharing your story. I can't tell you what this is going to mean to the tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people that are going to listen to this in future years. I mean, it's just really, on behalf of Brad and myself, thank you. Thank you for sharing your story with us.
Well, thank you. Thanks for giving me the opportunity, and thanks for everything that you guys do. We wouldn't be here now if it wasn't for y'all.
All right, everyone, is it too late? The answer is definitively no. It's never too late for you to improve your situation. So excited for Becky Jonas on the show to share this story with us. If you got value from today's episode, and if you've been getting value from the episodes up to this point, just take 1 second. Press the subscribe button on the platform you're listening to this on. Just lets the providers know you're getting value from the show and you want to be here when we produce additional content. If you want to support us in what we're doing here at Choose FI, here are 4 easy ways. 1, leave us an iTunes review. To do that, just go to choosefi.com/iTunes. 2, use our page to sign up for travel credit cards. If you want to travel the world with miles and points instead of your hard-earned dollars, then just go to choosefi.com/cards and get started today. 3, if you're working on the milestones of FI, set up a personal capital account to track your progress and use our affiliate link. It's completely free, and just go to choosefi.com/PC. P as in Paul, C as in Cat. And 4, and most importantly, find your friends, coworkers, and family members who might be open to this message and tell them about the podcast. Have them start with episode 100. It is a fantastic starting place. All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth one life hack at a time.